Blog Talk Radio.
Well, folks, welcome to one more edition of Politics Done Right. Thank you very much. I'm Egberto Willis, your host. Thank you for spending another piece of your Saturday with me. I'm very happy to have you. Please remember, this is also a call-in show, so I would love to hear from you guys. The number is 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. You can reach me also on Twitter at Egberto Willis, on Twitter at Egberto Willis, and of course you can reach me by email, egberto@coffeeparty.com, coffeepartyusa.com, or egberto@egbertowillis.com. Website, coffeepartyusa.com or egbertowillis.com. Now, folks, it's been a very eventful week, wasn't it? I mean, a whole lot happened. It seemed like we got our budget deal. Is that a good thing? I don't know, but we got a budget deal. This week, Obamacare seems to be on track. It seems like they still think they can get the 7 million people to sign up by March 31st, I think it's the date. That would be wonderful. You know, this morning I woke up, came into the office to finish doing the little post prep for the show, and I kind of got sidetracked because I know many of you know that Megyn Kelly sort of a mashup that's been going on with Santa Claus and Jesus and their relative whiteness, and I just thought it was a funny story, and I got all into watching some of the videos. First, her initial video, then Jon Stewart, then Don Lemon at CNN, and then her I Take It Back video. And, you know, at first it was a rather silly story, but then again, I started to think about it and think about things like expropriations and little kids' minds and all of that, and I kind of wrote a little blog about that, so check that out. It's also at the Coffee Party, join the Coffee Party Facebook page, and I have it at my site as well, so check it out and tell me what you think about it. But what is the major topic of today? The major topic of today is yet again, budget deal on backs of middle class again. You know, everybody is happy. Democrats are happy. Republicans are happy. Both of them got a deal, and each one of them thought they could walk off and said they had a victory. Maybe they did. But as usual, the middle class lost. Those with the least, those without the ears of the politicians, lost one more time. One more time. Don't fall for what you think is a good deal. We have a lot of work to do. In fact, this week, you know, I had all planned an essay that I was going to do at Daily Coast. You know, I usually read my Sunday essay here. You guys listen to it first before before it actually gets run at Daily Coast. I wrote the essay, and it wasn't the one that I intended to write. You know, so far I've been all Obamacare because I know that a whole lot of people are being misinformed, and I try to spend as much time on that issue as possible to make sure that people have accurate information and people go out there and do what they need to do to protect their families, their loved ones, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But after the budget deal, I said, you know what? I probably should write one piece on this. So I did. And I'm going to read it in a second, but I want to remind folks that the number is 646-929-2495. And the title of the essay, the DECOS essay that's going up this week, is Con by Republicans as Democrats Seed. I could just as well have called it Con by Republicans and Democrats as They All Seeded. And what it came about is that nothing really changed. And before I get into the essay, I want to bring up another point, because this week there's a Democratic think tank called Third Way. So be aware of this, folks, guys. Third Way. Third Way this week in the, I think it was the Wall Street Journal, in which they excoriated the new mayor of New York and excoriated the new senator from Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren. In effect, this article, again, from what is supposed to be a progressive think tank, again, they decided to attack because Warren believed and articulated that Social Security does not need cutting. Social Security and the safety net is not the problem. She had the nerve to come out against that. The mayor of New York, I don't remember his name right now. I guess I must be getting old. The mayor of New York, he has the gall to think that he has to do something to help the citizens of New York. You know, there are many folks here at Coffee Party that tries to put into people's heads that a lot of our problem really isn't the Democratic Republican divide. It is the moneyed interest divide. It is the class divide. And I think more than anything else, that is exactly what this budget showed. This budget shows that those with the least, those that have no voices, nobody gives a damn. The unemployed, most are unemployed not because they're at home lazy. They're unemployed because society has not provided the platform for there to be jobs that they can get. But no, it's their fault. It's their fault. I'm trying to find the article because I think folks need to read that article. And I'm looking it up right now. I think I'm going to find it in a little bit. But beforehand, I guess Coase called it a coordinated Wall Street Democrat campaign. I noticed in that term he used Democrat campaign, which I think was appropriate. But anyway, let's go to the essay first, and then I'll move on to the Third Way after that. But like I said, the essay is titled Con by Republicans as Democrats Seed. I don't know, maybe I should change it to Con by Ald. as all seed, but we can discuss that later on. Remember, folks, you can give me a call at 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear what you think about what's going on, but here goes the essay. President Obama took a lot of flack when he said, "I think Ronald Reagan changed the trajectory of America in a way that, you know, Richard Nixon, and in a way that Bill Clinton did not." Unfortunately, that statement is as true then as it is now. Americans have been living under Republican policies since Ronald Reagan. It is true that President George Herbert Walker Bush and President Clinton were far more fiscally responsible than the mathematically challenged and reality deficient Ronald Reagan and George Bush. George Herbert Walker Bush and Bill Clinton raised taxes in light of exploding deficits, which ultimately resulted in a nominal budget surplus. America went from voodoo economics to a form of fiscally responsible supply-side economics. They cleaned up Ronald Reagan's mess. They cleaned up Ronald Reagan's fiscal mess. They, however, did not clean up his flawed middle-class pilfering supply-side economics. In fact, it could be argued that Clinton was complicit by signing the repeal of Glass-Steagall, even as he allowed further erosion of the social safety net. When George W. Bush, the son, got appointed president in 2000 by the Supreme Court, the era of fiscal irresponsibility or fiscally irresponsible supply-side economics returned on steroids. It was tax cuts justified by the discredited Laffer curve all over again. And let me pause from here to explain the Laffer curve. In writing for Daily Coast, a lot of those folks, you know, talk about the Laffer curve a whole lot. A lot of people, however, in general America, it isn't one of those subjects that they're really interested in or that they talk about a whole lot. But the Laffer curve is, I really am not sure why it's called the Laffer curve, because I don't think that theory originated with him, but I guess he has taken ownership of the theory, in which it tries to create some balance of where a certain increase in taxes actually then results in decrease in the amount of revenue actually collected from that increase in taxes. Actually, the reality is it makes no sense. But it is that curve that you would see on CNBC and all these other financial channels with economist Laffer going out there and talking about some point where you start to get diminishing returns, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Paul Krugman and many other economists have pretty much blown the Laffer curve into a laugh. I remember when I wrote my book, and this is the one plug I'll give for my book for the day, as I see it, Class Warfare, the Only Resort to Right-Wing Doom. I spent some time on the Laffer curve there, and I got some input from a couple of professors including that professor from Santa Clara University of California, Santa Clara, Ian, I can't pronounce his last name, who has that great blog site on income disparity, income inequality, that sort of thing. But anyway, the Laffer curve is discredited, has been discredited, but it is still used by those who believe in supply-side economics and extraordinarily low taxes. Just thought I might give a little context to the Laffer curve, but continuing. Enough Democrats never fought, let me read the last sentence. When George W. Bush got appointed president in 2000 by the Supreme Court, the era of fiscally irresponsible supply-side economics returned on steroids. It was tax cuts justified by the discredited Laffer curve all over again. Enough Democrats never fought against the irresponsibility of the Republicans. Who wants to be on the record opposing tax cuts? Republicans never worry about deficits if they are attributed to tax cuts or corporate welfare. Deficits only matter when related to the social safety net, meaning Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, or anything that benefits the average human, the average middle-class folk. Enough Democrats never fought. Anyhow, since the inception of supply-side economics, the income and wealth of the middle class have been on a steady decline. This occurred even, and before anybody, you know, want to give any comments on this, these articles that I write, I make sure to put sightings. And the reason I put sightings is because I don't ever want people to think I'm just writing off the cuff or talking about that which I do not know. I make sure to cite from the experts where possible, and wherever I'm making inferences, I give the reasons for said inferences with the facts that backs it. Anyhow, continuing. Since the inception of supply-side economics, the income and wealth of the middle class have been on a steady decline. This occurred even as the wealth and income of the top 1% have been increasing way above the rate of inflation. Even during the prosperous 1990s and parts of the 2000s, the working middle class was living a semblance of prosperity aided by financial bubbles and easy credit that ultimately disintegrated. This is best explained by Professor of Economics Emeritus Richard D. Wolff, and there's also his documentary called Capitalism Hits the Fan. So if you go ahead and check out this blog for that'll be posted at Decos and probably on Monday at coffee party. I have links to both the documentary and links to the paper he wrote on the semblance of prosperity. That's not what he called it, but that's pretty much what it's all about. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting un resultado diferente, a different result. This applies to both Democrats and Republicans. Now, metrics since the inception of supply-side economics show a relative marginal decline in tax receipts, except for certain externalities, financial bubbles, as I mentioned before. Yet, Republicans continue to push tax cuts under all conditions. They are usually successful because Democrats always begin their negotiations from a reasonable position. As such, they're continuously conned by Republicans. To note that Obamacare is an exception, however, and listen good here, listen well here first, but this is important, because while a lot of people disparage how Obamacare didn't go far enough, which I agree with. I believe in a single-payer system. It didn't really go far enough. Under the political realities, it was a masterful achievement. Again, not saying it was a masterful law. I'm saying the achievement of getting there, the achievement of the codification of the potential of universal care in the American system, in American system, which is very individualist, that was a hell of an accomplishment. So I continue. It is important to note that Obamacare is an exception. Many liberals seem to believe Obamacare displayed that lack of democratic negotiation skills. When one reads the bill, it is evident that the reason Republicans hate it as much as they do is that it was a huge tax increase victory. Moreover, there were taxes skewed appropriately towards the wealthy. If you take a look at where, remember, Obamacare is one of the first major bills, social safety net bills. that was actually paid for. In other words, the drug deal, we never paid for the drug bill. We never paid for all these things under President Bush. We just passed the laws and, you know, borrowed to pay for it. The promise was from the OMB, from the figures from the OMB, we would make sure that this law is paid for. And how do you pay for it? A lot of folks that never paid taxes on their income while the middle class Americans had to pay taxes on theirs, they finally had to pony up. There was a 3% tax on stock sales of stocks. There are taxes on tanners. There are taxes on a lot of these different industries that make a whole lot of money in the medical field, but were not appropriately taxed. And that is where came from. But I continue. It is important to note that Obamacare is an exception. Many liberals seem to believe Obamacare displayed that lack of democratic negotiation skills. When one reads the bill, it is evident that the reasons Republicans hate it as much as they do is that it was a huge tax increase victory. Moreover, these were tax skewed appropriately towards the wealthy. As such, the vast majority of Americans will not feel those increases. Not to worry, much of the spoils from productivity and wealth creation went to the wealthy over the last 3+ decades. It did not go to those, the working middle class, on whose backs the wealth was made. The new budget deal is the last straw, however. What is evident? Democrats allowed themselves to be conned once more. The figure on the top shows the difference, the different proposed budgets. And what I show in the figure, folks, is the proposed budget from President Obama, the proposed budget from the Senate, the proposed budget from the House, the proposed budget from Ryan, and the actual budget. So here it goes. The new budget deal is the last straw. What is evident? Democrats allowed themselves to be conned once more. The figure on the top shows the different proposed budgets. President Obama proposed $1.235 billion. Paul Ryan proposed $967 billion. The compromise was $1,012 billion. This is much closer to Paul Ryan's meager budget than to the president's. The president's initial budget was already a compromise. If you remember, folks, he actually put things like, what do they call it, chaining CPI for Social Security, in which what actually happens is if you used to buy steak and steak went up by 20%, but you would normally replace steak with chicken and chicken only went up by 5%. Instead of getting a 10% increase, you get a 5% increase because you can switch steak for chicken. Chain in CPI makes no sense. It hurts the middle class, folks who've worked all their lives. Anyhow, we continue. Where was I? Okay. Paul Rand proposed $967 billion. The compromise was $1,012 billion, in other words, $1.012 trillion. This is much closer to Paul Ryan's meager budget than to the president. The president's initial budget was already a compromise. My question to all these supposed progressives, why did we not start from the people's budget? Anybody ever looked at the people's budget? I looked at it. Congressman Grijalda, it's on his website. It's been out for quite some time. It's modified to meet new conditions constantly. Nobody looks at it. Nobody wants to take it seriously because you know what? It right taxes folk and it ensures that we no longer have an economy where, from a tax point of view, that taxes become the wealth transfer engine from the middle class to the wealthy. Continuing. The new revenues for this budget came from the average American. Corporate welfare remained untouched. Doctors got their fix. Doc fix, look that up, folks. The unemployed did not get them. The unemployed 3 days after Christmas, they're left holding the bag, folks. There will be higher airline security fees, which means all of us that fly will pay more. Curbs in pension benefits for federal workers. What's this about attacking federal workers constantly? They are no different than any other workers. They provide a service, but somehow we think it is wrong to be a government worker. And a curb in annual cost of living increases in benefits for military retirees under the age of 62. So we made a deal to give these guys certain types of increases, and now we're going to curb it, just like what they're doing in Detroit, taking away the promises that were made and things that people have paid for. Our military fight the wars and maintain safety to ensure the viability and profitability of the American corporatocracy. For that, they are but pawns in the political process. To many, it is becoming ever more depressing. Who is fighting for the poor? Who is fighting for the working middle class? Is losing the American way of life a foregone conclusion? The answer is a categorical no. The plutocracy depends on apathy and lack of resolve. We must not afford them that luxury. We live to fight another day. We build on what we have. We work to elect those that will work for and promote the interest of the poor and working middle class. When we lose a battle, we get up, brush off, and re-engage. We are making our list. We're checking it twice. And electing the right folks in 2014, it will start being nice. Folks, the number 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. Give me a call. Let me know what you think about this budget deal. Let me know what you think about anything that's going on in our current body politic. Love to hear from you guys. 620. Who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Okay, this is Jack Golden.
Hey, Jack. You know, by now you'd think, Jack, I would see 620 and just assume it is you. But for some reason, I don't. Maybe I'm just getting old. Anyway, what's up, Jack?
Okay, I think I got the solution to that is third party.
Okay, I think there are a couple of coffee party folks that would really agree with you as well. One of them should call
okay,
in.
Okay, third party meaning the ideals of the two Roosevelts. Plus a little bit of Reagan thrown in. I mean, I don't disagree with Reagan 100%. I think right now Reagan would not be accepted by current Republican Party as a member. And I really am serious about that. The thing to do is okay. The budget was a baby step towards a solution to the problem. It's better than nothing, but that's all I can say about it.
You know, Greg Rusek in the chat room just said something that just hit me, and it's sad that I'm coming back to you now, Jack, but I just had to bring this up. He said, Reagan couldn't even be a Democrat today. That's how far right the entire body politic has moved. Oh, well, the political class has moved. Continue, Jack. Sorry for interrupting.
He could be
right.
Republican today. Yeah.
Well, I mean, what Greg is trying to say is that he couldn't even be a Democrat today. That's how much to the right we've moved.
Yeah. Yeah.
But continue, my friend.
Well, that's why you look at the ideals of Franklin Delano and Teddy, and maybe a bit of Reagan, because he was for in foreign policy. He started implementing peace. And I think one of the things would be work with Russia and China, Russia especially, towards reducing, eliminating nuclear weapons. And I think the step with Iran is a good step. And what's happening in between Israel and Palestinians.
Right.
That's a good step, too. I think there is progress. I'm a little optimistic, and I think the Tea Party's had Tea Party members had their comeuppance.
Right.
When John Boehner got some balls and said enough is enough, and I cannot remove my concept about John Boehner being a, what they call, a selfish coward. Selfish meaning he wants his job. He wants to keep that Speaker of the House job.
I won't call him a selfish coward, Jack. First of all, I don't think that's the case. I think John Boehner has a bad hand. I'll be honest with you. I like when I'm writing, I hit John Boehner hard. But I know that is a political side. But the reality is, the guy has a bad hand. He's probably one of the speakers of the House that has had the worst hand to deal with. Because if you're dealing with a group of people that are factless, that they do not care about harming a country, and they make up a large part of your caucus, you're hosed. Now, I think somebody tried to defend on a I don't remember her name, her show on MSNBC.
Rachel Maddow.
Not Maddow. It's the young lady in the mornings. I think she shows up. She comes on at 12 Eastern, 11 Central.
Forget her name.
You're right, but
something like that.
Yes, Alex Wick. Yes.
Alex Wick.
Anyway, not Alex Wick, but it's the other Alex. But anyway, she was defending, one of the ladies there came and defended Boehner, and there was some pushback. And when I listened to the pushback, I actually said, no, please, folks, it's okay to be partisan, but remember Boehner somehow, as he is a Republican, and, somehow he had to navigate that field. And I hear you, Greg. I really do. But, like I said, I write and I give Boehner a hard time. But when we look at the reality of the position of the crazies that he works with, and I hate to call them crazies, but if you hear the things, if you hear the guy who's running against Cornyn, what he talks about, it's just amazing. But, Jack, the calls are starting to come in, so let me go ahead and get to 210. 210, I think this is John from San Antonio. Your number I always remember. How you doing, John?
Good, good. Excellent opening, Egberto.
Thank you, my brother. Talk to me.
Almost everything about it. Yeah, I just want to you were talking about that December 2nd article that I spoke about last week by Cowan and Kessler called
in the
Wall Street Journal, Economic Populism is a Dead End for Democrats. And
right.
So, and Bill de Blasio is the guy who you are
the
mayor-elect of New York City, right?
You know, so, what's so interesting, before you finish, Daily Kos has a whole series. Well, you're there, so you probably read Kos's entire series on Third Ways, which was pretty good. I kind of indexed them on my last thing. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was speaking about for about, 5 or 10 minutes last week, all the my different perceptions. You wrote a post a day later, and you were just quoting Coase. I was quoting John McCarter and a few other people, but it was a
right.
great reaction. And, Daily Coase has a great resonating effect, you know, even in D.C. It's incredible. I mean, there's no
right.
doubt about it. I mean, I hope... at the 2015 Coase Convention, we'll have another repeat with Joan McCarter interviewing all the potential candidates, and I think that'll be great. I want to talk a little bit about the budget, and I'll refer to a piece by Kevin Drum from the 11th, and he's quoting a conservative wonk star, as he's called, Yuval Levine, and he's talking about the deal. He says, "This deal would amount to the Democrats accepting the implications of the misjudgment in abiding in the Budget Control Act in 2011. It doesn't much change the terms reached in the original Budget Control Act and the sequester deal, and essentially cements the Democrats' loss and miscalculation in that deal. The Democrats' hope, given that they control both the White House and the Senate, was to replace the sequester with some combination of tax increases and more palatable spending cuts. That the Democrats would accept a deal like this is a pretty striking indication of how the Republican House has changed the conversation on the spending front since 2010. Think of it this way. In their first budget, after retaking the majority, in the 2012 Ryan budget, passed in 2011, the House Republicans wanted discretionary spending to be at $1.39 trillion in 2014 and $1.47 trillion in 2015. Those budgets were, of course, described by the Democrats in the political press, but I repeat myself, as some reversion to humanity's barbaric past. Yet this proposed deal with the Democrats would put the discretionary spending at $1.02 trillion in 2014 and $1.014 trillion in 2015, in both cases below that of the first House budget. To some extent, Levine is probably – this is Kevin Drum again – is probably
right.
overstating his case in order to nudge conservatives on board to a deal he thinks is palatable and away from yet another round of government shutdowns. He is correctly views as disastrous for a Republican. Still, he's basically right. Democrats originally believed the sequester would never happen. Neither the supercommittee would replace it, or else Republicans would eventually cave, and because they can't tolerate the defense cut. But it turned out not to be true. They aren't happy with the defense cuts, but in the end, to the surprise of Democrats, they decided they can live with them. Now, what bothers me about the deal is why they didn't take a stronger stand, knowing that the deadline is January 15th. Now, Ryan comes in. He says, well, we're going to leave on the 13th of December, and we want a deal done. And they accepted this deal, which was a pretty bad deal. I mean, I think you should hold out. And if in the end, come around, let's say, the 10th or the 12th, if you can't get a better deal, you accept, what's on the table. But, I mean, just to this preemptive, a month before the deadline, we're going to give up, and we're not going to push for unemployment. That was the main thing, is the push for unemployment. On December 28th, 1.3 million people are going to lose their unemployment benefits. Now, the Democrats say they're going to demand that in the Farm Bill. This is what Chris Van Hollen's saying. But I don't think. I mean, why didn't they demand it in the budget? I mean, this has been to have a huge impact on people, and I think.
Go ahead, Ann. Continue, Am John.
So I mean, I'm just wondering if you agree that they should have been promoting their idea, and trying to drive a harder bargain. I mean, trying to go with progressive ideas.
John, I think, I think if you listen to the Coase piece that's going on, and 503, I'm coming to you next. If you listen to the piece that I wrote there, my title says it all. They ceded. They caved. They were conned. You know, I mean, it is a famous thing of negotiation. And notice one of the parts that I said in the paper here, I said, I want to get back to that because, you know, I really thought about when I said this, and I didn't want to sound too partisan, but it turned out that way. I said Democrats always begin their negotiations from a reasonable position. As such, they are continuously conned by Republicans.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is if I start my negotiation position from something that is plausible and you start it from something that is rather arcane, in other words, cut $40 billion from food stamps. Okay, and I start with, okay, we'll cut $4 billion from food stamps. Then the negotiation position is between $4 billion and $40 billion. So I've started out by screwing people who need the food. You know, people are not on food stamps because they want to be on food stamps. Yes, there are some people that abuse the stuff. But the vast majority of people taking food stamps with some bit of shame, with some bit of, you know, they don't want to be seen doing that. So, I mean, I'm absolutely with you, John. I mean, the Democratic negotiating position is pathetic. And I honestly think that it is pathetic because, and I hate to agree with one of my brothers from Coffee Party, but it's because they're in a lot of ways in cahoots. Okay, in other words, they are both protecting the same class. Let's go back, and 503, I'm going to come to you in a little bit. But, John, let's go back to what the interview. Coast, remember I told you did a whole series on the third way.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Well,
it.
The Senator from New York, Senator, what's his name?
Chuck Schumer.
Chuck Schumer from New York was interviewed by National Review, I believe it was, or National Journal, one of them. In which he was, you know, he was proud to say, I'm the one who got Elizabeth Warren to run. But in order, before I decided on getting Elizabeth Warren to run, I went to Scott Brown and I said, will you support the amendment, or rather the law that says money is not speech? You remember that?
I talked about it.
And if,
yeah.
Schumer said, if Brown had decided to come out in support of that law, he would not have supported a Democratic challenger as he did. Knowing that the Democratic challenger would have supported Citizens United, but would have been also progressive in the policies that they came across that would make it better for the middle class. So Schumer, one of the leaders in the Democratic Party, came out in an interview and stated that he was willing to bargain away the middle class for something that didn't stand a chance in hell of passing. Think about that.
Yeah, he has a very mixed record. I mean, on some issues he is very good. I mean, he's been fairly consistent, but I mean, on a lot of, he's too influenced by Wall Street. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he's in their pockets. I mean, it's sad to say.
Absolutely.
You know?
But stay with me, John. We won't continue this because you have a lot of points that you mentioned that I want to come in. But let me go ahead and bring 503 in. And before I bring him in, folks, remember the number is 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. I'd love to hear from you guys and hear other opinions. I would love to hear if there are any Republicans out there that are also mad about this bill, I'd love to hear your reasoning. And you know, for all practical purposes, you know my point of view. I think Republican policies won the day on this bill. But anyway, 503, you're hot. Who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Greg Berto, it's Dan Aronson.
Brother Aronson, make your point because you know I've been trying to get you on.
I heard. but I'm not going to go there. But the first thing I want to know is this. Who are you and what have you done with the real Egberto Willis?
What have I done with the real Egberto Willis? Explain.
I was so proud. I don't know if you saw it I was the first one to comment on your post promoting the show this morning. And I said, I am so proud of you, my brother. I could not be more proud of you for coming out and saying, you know what? This is a bigger problem than just red or blue. this is a bigger problem.
Dad,
however,
yes,
I'm so proud of you. But let me suggest a few things, right?
Go ahead.
Nancy Pelosi, I love the quote. Nancy Pelosi told the fellow Democrats, "Embrace the suck," right? Which, as we know, is actually a Marine saying. which refers to the fact that 99% of the things you do in the Marine are very, very, very difficult. He goes, and they go, embrace the suck. I believe this is strictly a political move. And I believe it, that there's a good piece to it, and there is a possibly even better piece to it, right? So first of all, I believe that after what happened the last time when they played their game of chicken, which is what John was suggesting he wished they had done, I believe that a thing, well, sure, you said wait further, wait
right,
further,
look,
wait further, wait till the 10th, wait till the 11th, wait till
Dan,
the deadline.
Dan,
tremendous harm.
Let me ask you to do one thing, because
sure.
I want to keep it on an intellectual type of a level. So make your point as far as what you think, and then John can always respond again.
Of course. I think doing it preemptively was a good thing. I think they realized they weren't going to get what they wanted. There was precedent for the last time, and that they said, you know what, it really does the country a lot of harm, right, and there's a lot of negative feelings wrapped up in this game of chicken they play when they wait till the day of or the day before and trying to make a deal, right? And secondly, they're not asking for a lot. Now, why? I can tell you why. It's real simple. This is politics. We got an election coming up in 2014. I don't want to be known as the guy who played the game of chicken and then caved, because I've now done two bad things. So I'm going to preemptively say, oh, you win. You got me over the barrel. I'm just going to cave, and then at 24, but I'm not going to cause the people this angst of having to wait till the deadline. So now I'm the guy, hey, look, what could I do? I did what I could do the first time. I took the deal the second time so that nobody was in a lot of pain and there wasn't a lot of angst about it. So obviously what you've got to do is make me the majority party now come 2014.
Let me ask you something,
I'm the reasonable party.
I want to ask you something, because I don't, I don't know that I fully agree. First of all, I agree 100% that it's politics. But explain to me. I actually look at this as a supply side austerity win. Don't you look at it that way?
Oh, absolutely. It's a terrible deal. I'm not going to argue that. It's a terrible deal. But the fact is, I believe they didn't see any way to win, and that this is their best chance to change things, because it's a two-year deal, right? But
yeah.
What happens if they all of a sudden take back the House? Now the whole game changes, right?
Right.
And it changes before the 2 years are up.
Okay, so you're in effect are agreeing. You're agreeing that the Democrats did lose this round.
And I say they did it on purpose.
Okay, I was misunderstanding.
I said they did it on purpose so that they can come into the 2014 elections and say, we're the reasonable party. These guys are obviously out of control, and they won't negotiate, and so you've got to kick them out and put us in. Yeah,
okay,
absolutely.
Before I ask John to chime in, let me just say that, Dan, I wish you would read my blogs with less colored glasses, because I don't think I changed my position at all. But I'm glad that you're proud of me. Knowing that you're proud of me makes me happy that you actually saw through this one. But John, go ahead and respond or chime in.
Well, I mean, I don't believe that negotiating until a deadline is playing chicken. I mean, you're trying to get the best deal that you think is going to help the country. And the problem is that a lot of the base of the Democratic Party, a lot of progressives, don't feel that the politicians, you know, they are bought by the corporations and by Wall Street, and they want a fighter. That's why this whole movement with Elizabeth Warren and Bill de Blasio and all the other great progressives in the House, you know, has that's what's leading the party. I mean, that's what's driving the party. And this deal, I mean, I'm not saying it was horrible. I mean, there are some good things. The fact is that it did cut off $65 billion from the sequester, $45 billion in the first year, and that's going to help the economy, you know, this year, in 2014, and so that'll, you know, the two issues are probably going to be the ACA and how the economy is doing, and then whatever else Fox can throw out to try to muddy the waters and see if that has any impact. So I do think that it's very important to negotiate for the best deal that you can, and that's not playing chicken. Playing chicken is playing extortion with the debt ceiling like the Republicans did. And there's a great quote from Krugman, and he's talking about that. He says it was also possibly a small step towards political sanity with some Republicans provisionally. The notion that a party controlling neither the White House nor the Senate can nonetheless get whatever it wants through extortion. But the large picture is one of years of deeply destructive policy imposing gratuitous suffering on working Americans, and this deal didn't do much to change that picture. And I definitely agree with that.
I read that. That is this blog in response to I think everybody carried that particular blog post that he put up there on his blog at the New York Times. But, you know, and I tell you this, Greg, I think, you know, we praise the Constitution and we do all those things, right? But I honestly think that we have a severe flaw in the Constitution in that so few can wreak havoc on a country in as much as most of the country is controlled by a particular point of view that they can still wreak havoc. It's a constitutional flaw that I don't know we can fix without redoing the Constitution. Henceforth, move to amend and all these other groups that we have out there. I think there are areas that just need a rewriting because, again, think about all of this. You know the numbers very well, both Dan and John, that there are more people who voted for the progressive side in the House, but the House is very dominated by the right side. And that is simply, you know, we can try to put any kind of spin on it, but it's a flaw in our democracy. Dan?
I would say that's not the problem.
Okay.
If there's a flaw in the House, it's about gerrymandering and the
right.
ability to gerrymander. However, here's what I say it is. I believe that the last 5 years of stagnation and of Republican tyranny is based solely on something that it's not in the Constitution, Egberto. It's called the filibuster. And that's in the Constitution.
That is a rule that was
written into the Senate. And if it was not for the filibuster, none of this would be happening.
You know, that is true as well. But, I mean, still as it is right now, that we have two houses and we have separate houses. And in as much as we have houses by different parties, both parties won both chambers. It's just that gerrymandering changed it. So, I mean,
But Egberto, if there was no filibuster, then the Democrats would be ruling the Senate in the same way that the Republicans would be ruling the House, and there would be that check and balance. But the Democratic rule in the House is not a rule because of the filibuster. It makes them impotent. They cannot exercise power because of the filibuster.
First, you don't have to convince me about the filibuster. I agree with you, okay? I mean, the filibuster, I think, is an arcane instrument that needs to go all the way. They partially got rid of it. I think in the next 5 years, it's gone completely. What do you think, John?
No, I don't think it is. I mean, I wish it was. I wish, you know, we've talked about this before, you know, having, like, what happens in California, and I believe it was in Florida, used to have that. To where they had, bipartisan groups forming the constituencies, and I agree with that. That should happen, but the people who win in both Democratic parties and the Republican parties, they want to preserve it. And so, I mean, there's really, and in the Supreme Court has, said it's constitutional time after time, and so I don't really. seem much of a change in that happening. It is wrong, though. I don't think it should be constitutional. I wish it was in all 50 states. We had bipartisan people putting out districts, I don't see much momentum for that happening.
In the piece I put, for 2014 and going forward, I just think we have to create a different electorate. But before, let me just put a name thing here. Folks, please remember, give us a call, 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. I'd love to hear any sort of opinions you have on what's going on here about the body politics, about the budget, about the budget deal, about anything political or otherwise. But I tell you, yes.
Can I, so, Egberto, you asked me to come on to address a specific point that my friend Jack made. Which, if this is a good time, I'd love to do it.
Go ahead.
So, first of all, I hope he's still listening. Absolutely brilliant comment. There are two guys, and they did it in two totally different ways. So if you want to look for a solution to this mess, you can look to either one of those guys, right? So Franklin Roosevelt was a very, 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 very rich man, came from an extremely wealthy family, right? And he went to his rich friends, and he made a deal with them. He said, I'm going to raise your taxes to a stupidly high level, but don't worry, in the end, it'll work out for you. And they did it. They went along with him, right? So we have this group called the Patriotic Millionaires. We need to find one of those guys and run over. We need a Mitt Romney who says, no, we need to pay more. And there's plenty of them out there. See, that's Franklin Roosevelt. Now, Teddy was the fighter, right? He was the guy who went to Congress and said, you want what? Go away. And then he took his case to the American people and said, I'm not working with these people. They're bought and paid for, and I'm not going to work with them. You need to help me straighten these people out. And he won. So we either need a progressive fighter or we need a conservative that understands the economics of high taxation being good in the long run. Now, if you got one of those, I'm in.
Actually, there is a group out there. And one of the problems, I think, Dan, is there has to be a lot more of us out there. When I say us out there, I mean that we have to, just like I have the voice here on Politics Done Right, and you have the voice and Press One for Democracy, and Janine has the voice on her show. Can you believe I just forgot the name of her show? Shame on me. The Lunch with Loudon.
Lunch with Loudon.
It just came back. And her show. And we need other people to do the same, because when you talk about Franklin Roosevelt, yeah, they had the radio and everybody listened to the radio. They didn't have a lot of different choices. Teddy Roosevelt, they had the publications that, I don't know if you know, in those days they always had these rags and everybody go out and throw the rags on the door or whatever. We are kind of splintered now, and not only are we splintered, but the powers that be have the mass access. We have to use our tools for that type of mass access to get the information out. So, I mean, the mere fact, I don't know if you, did you know that there's a group already of millionaires that are trying to talk exactly what you just stated? I'll find a group
they're called the Patriotic Millionaires. I'm going to,
okay.
They have their own website. I'm going to
exactly
paste it here into the, yeah. We used
but
to have one of them, Will Rice, was very, remember Will Rice? He was very active in the coffee party a couple of years ago when I first came out. Yeah, he's one of them.
Right. But I mean, there are some guys that have quite a bit more gravitas, if you will, than Rice did, and they are members of this group here. The thing about it is nobody hears about them, and maybe in a lot of ways, that's partially our fault in that maybe we should be promoting these guys a bit more. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Because you know who's not going to promote them? The six corporations that own 90% of the media that's put out in the United States. That's GE, Disney, AOL, Time Warner, News Corp. I almost had them memorized the other day. Yeah, those are their rich counterparts that don't want high taxes. And so, of course, are they going to give those guys a soapbox? Hell no.
I hear you. hey, Janine, call in. I want to talk to you. I mean, I made a boo-boo. I couldn't believe I didn't say lunch loud. And you know, I always sing that. I always sing her the name of her show, and it was like just ta-da-da-da, blank.
and I have to say, and Janine did the same thing, and I did it on Monday. We're forgetting Bud Fields and Progressive Politics Tennessee style.
Well, you know what I did?
Our newest.
On my blog postings, I now have all five shows listed, and so that Progressive Politics with Bud is right there listed as well. Folks, you got to listen to Bud as well. Bud is cool. But anyhow, folks, the number is 646-929-2495. I would love to hear some other points of view. That number is 646-929-2495. So the Congress is out now. They're on their vacation. I think the Senate is going to be working some this week to pass the budget unchanged. Now, according to Reid, there's nothing that they can do right now with the budget. John, do you know what the legality is about that, or the Senate rules about that? Is that real?
No, I heard they're going to vote on Tuesday, and it's a good percentage, a good chance that it was going to pass, you know, as is. That's what I've been reading.
Well, when Reid was confronted with stating with why don't they make some changes to it, because as you said, it's not due until what, January 15th or something like that?
Right. Right.
And force them to come into session. I think they don't come into session until, what, January 20th or something like that?
I think it's going to be earlier in January. They usually come in right after the new year.
Oh, okay. So they, if they wanted to, they could actually make a little fight out. You know, maybe that is what we need to do over the Christmas holiday. They need to have a lot of stories with the suffering that people are going to go through and all that sort of thing, because I don't think these guys really see what people go through. I don't think they live in reality land. I really don't.
There's an article by Greg Sargent that came out yesterday, and the title is "The Republicans Will Face Intense Pressure Over Unemployment Benefits." I mean, you know, whether that's true or not, we'll see. But that's Obama mentioned it in his weekly speech last week. And, Krugman mentioned it. Robert Reich said that was the main thing missing from the budget deal. So I think that will be in the forefront. I mean, it's terrible. I mean, I'm seeing people even on CNN this morning. There was a lady who was going to get cut off. I mean, what do they do? I mean, you know, I mean, unemployment is still at 7%. These people need a lifeline. And, you know, it's cruelty. I mean, it's cruelty to have these people go out on the street. I mean,
it's so interesting, and I think as soon as people find this out, the highest percentage of the people that take this type of welfare, food stamps, unemployment, that sort of thing, are in those states that are governed by the Republicans who don't want to do that. You must ask the question, how can they get away with it? And I don't know the numbers. I haven't checked. This just came to my mind. Is it that it isn't the people who vote for them that are on this, or is it just that their state, the Democratic or non-voting percentage of their state is the one with the that would be the food stamps recipient? Do you know?
Yeah, I think it all goes back to education, you know, through the centuries. I mean, the South has always been less educated, and the North has always, you know, even pre-Civil War, has been more educated, and they've had a better working conditions. I mean, the South was a plutocracy. I mean, you look at slavery, and I mean, that's the ultimate, you know, the horrible, you know, idea of plutocracy is actually having slaves. You don't have to do anything. You just have the slaves do all the work. You don't even have to pay them anything. And it's just, I mean, and it's always been that way, and it continues to this day. So, I mean, from a guy who went to Robert E. Lee High School in San Antonio, I know about, you know, the how the South, the whole mythology of the South is, you know, warps your mind. We have this horrible past that we don't want to acknowledge, you know, because of the cruelty, and we, you know, is this what we did to the Native Americans? It's the same thing, you know. And so, I mean, it's great to see, you know, like the movie that came out, you know, 12 Years a Slave, to see that nominated for the Golden Globes, and to you know, remind people, you know, this is the way, this is what happened in the South, and, you know, in the North also, you know, before, in the very earliest years. But I think it all comes down to that. I mean, people are, you know, oppressed, and, you know, a lot of them, they don't stress education in their lives, and a lot of people in the North and in the far West states, California, Washington, Oregon, they emphasize that more often. And I think that's why a lot more people are on food stamps. There's a long history of that. And the fact that they're vilified in these states is very sad and looked down upon when they're the people who need it the most. In fact, there was a website that came out, it says in Texas, called Americans Left Out of the Medicaid Fight, for the people who make under the poverty level, they're not eligible to even go in the exchanges, because they were supposed to go into the Medicaid extended benefits, like 25 of the states did, but most of the states in the South, and, you know, a few other states like Virginia and other states, you know, up further north, that don't have the Medicare expansion. I mean, they're just going to be left out. I mean, the people that are between 100% and 133% of poverty can still get in the exchanges. But if you're below the poverty level, you can't get insurance through the ACA. And that's
right.
What this website is about. And, you know, I signed on with it, you know, gave them my, you know, my thing. Of course, I signed on to lots of things, but get lots of emails. But, you know, I think it's very important to get the word out. You know, Texas left me out, you know. And we
That's
need
a great
to get
website.
These...
I got it yesterday in the email, and I haven't signed my name onto it yet, but I will be signing my name onto it. But I think from what I'm hearing through the grapevine, here in Texas, the politicians are actually starting to get worried. In fact, we've had a whole lot of party switches in the last – during last week was the deadline to sign up for all the primaries, right?
Yeah.
We had quite a few party switchers, and it was a party switching you wouldn't expect in Texas. It wasn't Democrats going to Republican, but the other way around. So there must be some undercurrents that aren't being reported right now that the pollsters know of what's going on in Texas. So we'll see. We'll see, John. But
yeah, I hope so. I mean,
I think there's a good possibility. But let me play a quick coffee party promo, and then I'm going to bring in Janine, and then we continue with the discussion.
Hello, everyone. This is John Cashin, host of the Coffee Party Radio Civics Minute. Did you know that the Coffee Party is funded by our listeners and fans, and not by the super PACs, think tanks, or by a super wealthy individual wanting to buy the American way? The Coffee Party USA is powered by the people and your passion to bring positive change to our country, but we need your help to continue. With just a small donation, you can help us continue bringing Americans together for a dialogue that attempts to bypass the normal partisan rhetoric that is so common today. The Coffee Party USA is striving to bring you original content from editorials, fact-checking, and video documentaries, while also working to bring you the latest information from all of the 535 congressional districts. No matter what party we may belong or what issues that we follow, one thing is always clear. We are all Americans. Please go to coffeepartyusa.nationbuilder.com/donate and donate what you can to help us move our country forward, united with one voice, E Pluribus Unum. From Paducah, Kentucky, this is John Cashin.
Janine Loudon, am I forgiven?
Of course you are. I never have a dead air moment. I just thought it was really cute that someone does this besides me. You know, when I can't remember Debbie Lynn's name, you know I'm in trouble. So.
You know, it's funny because that's what happened to me while I was talking about these different things. I wanted to talk about the New York mayor, Bill de Blasio, and until John reminded me, was like, oh, God, I can't believe it. I wrote so much about this guy, and now it's just zoom past me. Anyhow, tell me about, you had a great posting about the budget deal this week, Janine, where you kind of expressed stuff and provided a whole lot of links. Why don't you tell our audience a little bit about that?
Okay. Well, and I also posted today about the same kind of thing, but sort of in a different approach. But fundamentally, I'm very concerned that, the budget, to me, is just a sham. I think it's a sham. I think as a business owner, as a retired business owner, I certainly would have to budget. I'd have to base what I'm going to spend based on what my income was. That was true. But the thing is, when my quote-unquote budget got to the point where I was not being able to provide essential components of my service profile, I would look for more revenue. And I might look for revenue in the form of financing for some kind of a promotional campaign, or I would just plain go win more work. You know what I'm saying? It's like
right.
you just can't budget on the expense side only. And so I saw this budget, well, you know, it dealt with expenses. I didn't necessarily appreciate how it dealt with expenses. We've already talked about the fact that, you know, the unemployed are kicked to the curb, and yet who's accountable for unemployment? Like, really, who's accountable for unemployment? There aren't jobs. Well, who's not paying taxes? Who is not contributing revenue to this organization? It's the guys who should be making jobs who are taking their jobs elsewhere. And so it's you know, this makes no sense. When people say run government like a business, I go, okay, then run it like a good business, a sustainable business, a long-term business, don't run it like a darn wealth builder, because those guys are attack, hack, and run. You know, I don't think attack, hack, and run is how you run a country. And so my post today basically started out, dear Congress, I am not grateful that you just I'm supposed to be grateful that you didn't shut down the government again.
Right.
Really? We consider that successful? It's successful if we don't collapse the government? I don't think so. You know? Anyway.
Good point.
I'll take a breath and you can...
Oh, no. I want you to continue because I really want to hear more about that blog.
Can I just say that Janine just hit on the number one frustration that I have when politicians talk about the budget. Is that they only talk about one side. One guy's only talking about cutting expenses, and the other guy's only talking about increasing revenues, and you never hear where do we get the best value for our dollar? That conversation never takes place. No politician ever addresses value, right?
You know,
I don't mind. I live in Oregon. I pay high taxes, but I don't mind. I get great services. I get a value for my dollar. Nobody talks about that.
You know something, that is so true, Dan. But I tell you what, let me continue with your blog, Janine, because I want to kind of hit on something Dan said afterwards.
Well, okay, the name of it was Dear Congress, This is Not Common Ground. And it basically, it's really short. I can read it to you if you want to. But
yeah, please do.
Okay, it's really quick. Dear Congress, I refuse to be grateful that you did not shut down the government again. I refuse to be grateful for attacking military pensions, kicking the unemployed to the curb, or every other pound of flesh you cut so the wealthiest among us continue to be protected from the taxes they used to pay and that you now call new taxes. New graph. I will be grateful if all of you stop using the currently fashionable term common ground. You stole that phrase from the people. To us, it means finding things we agree are out of whack and creating solutions based on the needs of us all. It implies a belief in this republic's democratic process, the willingness to step over political labels, and freedom from behind-the-curtain puppet masters. It does not mean using money and political influence to support the few while marginalizing the beliefs and desires of the many. This year has been all about the latter, a tyranny of the minority. I suggest a New Year's resolution to actually seek the people's common ground. Think coffee shop logic, not D.C. cocktail party logic. After all, this is what we elected you to do.
End. Wow. Wow. Excellent. Comment, John.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. It's very, very true. I mean, we need, I agree with Dan to a certain extent. I think there are a few politicians who do talk about cutting this, particularly the military budget, and I applaud those people considering we spend, more money than the next seven countries put together. I think that should be one of the things that should be cut, and I think that the sequester was good in that sense. I mean, people are going to lose their jobs, though. I mean, when you make any cuts, you have to acknowledge that. And so, that's why I think that revenues, what Janine is talking about, that goes back to more the way that historically America has taxed the rich since the FDR era and had incredible prosperity until 1980. I mean, I wish it would go back to that. And what Dan was talking about earlier with the patriotic millionaires, I definitely agree with that. And it's great to see those people on TV. I think, who is it? Bill Gates' father is one of them, and I've seen some other people. I mean, you don't see them all the time. But the push really has to come from the common man. The common man has to realize, all those people that are protesting when they're making minimum wage, they have to go out and vote. They have to make their voices heard. And sure, you're not going to agree with what the politicians say on 100%, and it's easy to understand how people can get disenfranchised from the political process because they feel that they're all corrupt, and to a large degree that's true. I mean, just like, right now there's not a Democrat running against Lamar Smith, so I mean, I'm stuck with Lamar Smith, and that's the way it's going to be. And so I understand that feeling, but I think that revenues are more important, and I think that helping people is extremely important. And one of the good things about the budget is, after all, a lot of the Democrats, including Obama, talking about chain CPI, there was this huge pushback from the grassroots who didn't want cuts to Medicare, to Social Security, to Medicaid, and that didn't get included. It wasn't talked about. Now, the Republicans basically have this idea of saying, revenues are off the table, and that's very hard to negotiate with somebody like that. I mean, it's almost impossible.
You cannot.
And so, right. So, I mean, when they come in with this precondition that revenues are off the table, well, I mean, how do you deal with that? I mean, one of the things that the fee, I mean, I actually think that, that's not such a bad thing, but it should be applied to, the tax rate should be higher. 39.6 is not a high rate, and it only applies to, what, the 1%, So, I mean, that's what Obama campaigned on in 2008 and 2012, and then it got applied to, about a third of the people in last year's budget deal. And we just need more revenues. I mean, I agree.
I think there's a narrative issue here. When you tell somebody that if you make a dollar, that you're going to have to pay, let's say, half of that dollar back to the state, there's a visceral reaction. I don't care if you're a liberal or progressive or a conservative, right? In other words, I worked for that money, and you mean I have to give up half of it or more than half of it? And the reason why, and when I say progressive, I mean for the untrained progressive, or I should say, or the unlearned progressive. I don't know how it's the best way to say it. But the way they look at that is somehow, and as much as it is, it's marginal increases based on the amount of money you make, right? In other words, you make $10,000, you pay no taxes. You make a couple hundred thousand dollars, your tax rate maybe 39%. But as you go up, if you remember in the old days, it went up all to 90%. What people don't understand, and I think it has to do with our culture and what we've taught people, is they really do not have the concept of society. In other words, when Bill Gates made all those billion dollars, is Bill Gates really worth all those billion dollars, or was it society who gave him the platform that he could accumulate that wealth based on how our economic system works? And then the next question you have to ask, is it not then an aberration in our economic system if it doesn't have some method to retrieve what we define as a society or excesses? I think there is a severe flaw. I mean, there's something within the psyche of some people, somebody who makes $100 million a year, that somehow believe they've earned that $100 million a year. Any one of you, how do we get across to people that your worth at earning $100 million is an aberration, really, in the economic system, and not your real worth relative to the rest of what the average person in the society makes?
Can I comment?
Please do.
What you do with your $100 million decides that. If I take my $100 million and I keep $10 million of it, and I reinvest the other $90 million, A, if I do it well, I'm going to make more money, and B, if I do it well, I'm going to help a whole lot of other people out. It's the people who suck that $100 million out of the system and stick it in a mason jar and bury it in the ground. Those are the people who aren't worth anything. You're only worth what you give back.
Very good way of putting it. Dan, that is excellent. Let me see if I can qualify that a bit more and tell me if you're around my stance. Isn't that what we used to do, where we say, if you have your $100 million invested into production, you're not paying taxes on that because that is, you know, you're not getting benefit from it. Society is getting benefit from it, right? However, if you just stock it into owning a piece of stock or bonds, you should be, the holy hell out of profits on that should be, not only the profits on the capital should be taxed, don't you think?
This is where I need Janine. If you have cash left over in the bank at the end of the year, you pay taxes on it, right, if you're a business owner?
Go ahead, Janine.
I'll give the 10-second answer here. The significant difference. So first of all, you got to be a company that pays taxes in the first place. So it doesn't matter how much money Exxon has, it doesn't pay taxes. And that's because they have lobbyists, and lobbyists change law, blah, blah. In theory, you're correct, but here's what's really true, right? What's true is back in the day, if you had quote-unquote profit, you know, all firms did pre-tax planning, and you could forecast out and see just exactly what your profit was going to be. So in my case, what I would do is go, oh, great, because I need some new tools, or, oh, great, I need this new, I've been wanting this additional staff person, and I wasn't sure I could afford it. So what I did to avoid paying taxes, right, was actually reinvest profit into my company. Then it becomes an expense, then it's in a different place. It's not profit anymore. But tax avoidance planning included, hey, what's in it for me? What can I do with this money instead of give it to Uncle Sam? And when companies are reinvesting in themselves, creating jobs, buying materials, buying supplies, building infrastructure, then everybody benefits, right? Right now, because corporations don't pay taxes, virtually do not, then there is no benefit to reinvesting in themselves. And so that money that might have gone to new positions, or the money that might have gone to infrastructure, or the money that might have gone to equipment, supplies, whatever, services, isn't being spent. And so all those big, big companies are withholding from the economy their contribution to that that cycle that business, good business, creates in the economy. Because every dollar, you know, that a company spends, you know, it gets spent 17 times or something. I don't remember the economic development data exactly right now. But I got to tell you, every time you bring a new job into the community, that money gets spent time and time and time again, all the way from the grocery store to the insurance broker to the dry cleaners to the mortgage on a house. It just gets spent over and over. It passed from person to person to person. And so when you withhold the thing that stimulated that chain reaction of economic interaction, you starve the entire ecosystem, not just that job.
Exactly. This is Dylan Radigan's big rant. He talks about hundreds of millions of dollars through banking, through offshoring of jobs being extracted from the economy.
Right.
And how that is what is killing our economy.
Yes.
Now, Greg Rusek on the in the chat room says, what is also required beforehand? He said, higher taxes motivate corporations to protect that income by inventing it, or meaning, I think he means reinvesting it, and hopefully into something productive. And then he puts, what is required is tax code reform so that American corporations like Apple cannot account for revenues into overseas shell companies. Very true. And I think what Janine said is so important, right? When Janine says, I did tax planning, how to avoid paying these taxes. In other words, when she pays taxes, she loses, first of all, the taxes that she would have paid, theoretically speaking, would go into the government, who would then reallocate the resources that would, you know, make things better for society as a whole. But Janine is also saying she is onto herself a mini government who helps society, and she knows what to do to further grow her business, to hire more people, to circulate more money. So really, there's no. In a well-run government and a well-run business, they're complementary. If you can't find successful things to do with your excesses, then the government does, or it can. But if you can find successful things to do with your excesses, you do it, and you don't pay taxes. I mean, it seems to me it's something that is so easy to see, so visible. It's hard to see that people can't understand it.
Yeah, but here's the problem, Egberto. The tax rules that Janine is talking about, the incentives for reinvestment and to grow the economy, all of that changed in the 80s with the advent of globalization, but the tax code never changed. And so they can just, as Janine said, bury their wealth outside of our country, or worse, offshore jobs, and extract money. So the tax code has never been changed to account for globalization.
Agreed 100%. And you know, unfortunately, things are going to get a lot worse if we don't get up and fight against things like the Trans-Pacific Partnership and these other deals. We're actually at this point just about taking government out of the loop. And having I don't know if any of you listened to my show that I did with Move to Amend on Thursday, but that is exactly what we covered, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, where it would have an even deeper effect than what these other union, all these other exporting jobs overseas and all of that did. Because remember, in those days, what did we do, right? We wanted to export jobs so that we didn't have to worry about environmental concerns, so that we didn't have to worry about wage concerns, so we didn't have to worry about the health concern of the worker, all these different things. So we just create a plant in China, or we create a plant in Vietnam, or we create a plant in the Philippines, or one of these countries that have slacker rules. Well, here comes the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And what the Trans-Pacific Partnership is now saying is that a three-body tribunal decides if you as a country, you as a municipality, passes a law, environmental or whatever, that somehow determines that somehow could have an to them a negative effect on a company, that they can sue these entities and recover damages. In effect, nullifying the locally elected government from being able to dictate its own rules, because if you dictate a rule and you're found guilty of ruining a corporation's profits, you are now responsible for paying them. What does that do? So, I mean, there's a lot happening that we have to be very well aware of. Comment.
I'd like to comment on one thing that I think a lot of the progressive activists have been very very vocal online about the TPP, and 150 Democrats in the House have already come out against that, trying to tell Obama to be more transparent about what's actually in it, because everything that's in it has come from leaks, from WikiLeaks.
Right.
And, I mean, the fact that they're being so secretive is just absolutely awful, you know. And you know, from the leaks that have come out, I mean, they're just horrible. I mean, it's like NAFTA on steroids, and it'll be such a terrible event. I don't think it's going to pass. I think there's enough grassroots. Obama wants it passed before the end of the year. I think there's no way that's going to happen.
Well, actually, it can happen, because they actually went into recess because they couldn't come to some agreement. I don't want to interrupt you too long, but I want to say something that I forgot to say that is very necessary. You know, a lot of the American corporations, what they were trying to, they were attempting to remove the, what is the patent length, 17 years or something like that? If you hold a patent, they wanted to extend the length of a patent. In other words, if you make Claritin and your Claritin patent expired in 17 years like it did now, no longer that's the case. They want it extended more. So what does that do for the people in the third world? No longer can they count on the expectation that they'll have generic drugs that they can get at a cheaper price to help their community. But anyway, I just wanted to put that in because I forgot. Go ahead, John.
No, I mean, I agree with what you're saying, and I do think that it's important. I mean, this has been one of Obama's worst. I mean, he's had a pretty bad year, and it's been one of his worst things that he's done. And I don't understand why they can't talk about this. If this is supposed to be, for the people, we the people. Why can't
Right.
we have a discussion about TPP? And if you want to sell this, go ahead and sell it. Don't go. I mean, this fast track legislation is a terrible thing. It happened in the Nixon administration, but it still has to be passed by the Congress.
Right.
And it's kind of these weird coalitions between progressives and a lot of Tea Party folks who are, I mean, they're probably just against it because it has to do with Obama. But I mean, a lot of them do feel, it's ridiculous. I mean, this is another thing that you've got to keep your base, and you don't keep your base by doing things that help corporations, and you don't make speeches about income inequality and then turn around and, try to get the TPP passed.
Let me tell you something. That is
confounding.
John, let me tell you, first of all, I'm going on record here. I am coming out against TPP or any type of free trade agreement that does not ensure a base, meaning not America dropping to the standards of countries where they have no environmental controls or wage controls or safety of people control, supporting zero of those policies. In fact, I think we should repeal NAFTA, we should repeal CAFTA, we should repeal all these guys and forget about these trade agreements. They're not for the American people. They're solely to give corporations a freewheeling, a blank sheet throughout the world. In other words, it's no longer they don't want to have to fight within the laws of countries. They want to fight within corporate laws that everybody follows, so that they don't care about a dictator saying something in the Philippines or a dictator saying something in Argentina or whatever. They want a playing field where everything is the same and they don't have to abide by the cultures, laws, or anything else. I think go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Roberto, and let's not forget this. We all hate ALEC, right? We all hate this idea that corporations write laws and then hand them through their lobbyists to
right.
representatives who then go push them and try to get them passed, right? So this is a very big shortcut because let's keep in mind, this is being written by 600 representatives of big corporations. They're
exactly.
writing this thing. This
right.
is ALEC on steroids. This is the biggest legislative workaround. I mean, they're going right around the legislative process. They are flaunting the Constitution. There's so many things wrong with this thing. It's sickening. It's absolutely sickening. And I've never met anybody who said, I'm for the TPP.
My only concern about it, Dan, is how many people can actually grasp what it's going to do. Because, I mean, here's when President Obama comes out and starts to sell this thing, if he does, he's probably going to sell it on the creation of American jobs. And I will be one of the first people in line saying that's a fraud. And the reason I must say that's a fraud is because that is exactly what it will be. You cannot tell me that you're going to have the American worker competing with the Vietnamese worker and somehow that becomes a job creation. It's a mathematical impossibility.
Well,
and
here's what I would say to that.
Yeah.
It's not an impossibility. What it will simply do is drive wages further down than they already are here. This whole recovery thing has been about the creation of jobs, but all we've done is create low wage jobs, right? Unemployment's at 7.3%, but underemployment, the U6 number, is at 13.6%. That includes people who have part time jobs now, are just trying to make ends meet because they want full time jobs, but they can't get them. So we've created
exactly.
a lot of minimum wage jobs, and that's all this will do is create more minimum wage jobs if it creates jobs at all. Who needs
yeah,
that?
Well, let me tell you, we'll have a lot of calls. By the way, Greg, I see you put, what about CP? I didn't get to read everything on top, but I imagine you mean, what is CP going to do about these things? Well, I think my gut feeling is, well, when we get into our board meetings, we are likely going to agree to actually come. I'm just saying this as Egberto Willis, but I will be asking the board in one of our meetings to come out categorically against
I can insert something about that, Egberto. Basically,
yes.
we've already agreed as a board of directors to put information about the TPP out in radio, in posts on Facebook and other social media, and
mm-hmm.
with letting our membership know that we're actually going to ask them to vote.
Right,
and then we're going to...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Right, and so then we will actually be voting, and then the will of the membership will be executed. And, you know, what I'm seeing so far is basically that most people share your consideration, but there is discussion, there is dialogue on radio, on Facebook, in Twitter. There are, you know, we are in the conversation, and the time is short, right?
Right.
And so Dan, you can correct me here. Weren't we going to vote next week?
November 18th is when the ballots will go out.
Right, December 18th, will be allowed to vote. Now, membership obviously are people who make either a single annual contribution or a monthly sustaining contribution to actually be members of Coffee Party USA. The membership will vote on December 18th, and then we will come out blasting with whatever the determination of our membership is.
I'd like to ask you a favor, Janine, because you just said something important. Please give us, and folks, I am asking Janine to do this, please give our listeners a plug as to reasons we need them to join Coffee Party and we need them to join and vote on this issue. Please articulate that in a phrase, in a long paragraph for me.
Oh, well, gosh. You know, like any organization, we have revenue and we have expenses. I mean, it's the same thing we're talking about today. And we've been putting together our strategic plan for 2014. And if you want to be a part of either driving, you know, being a determining person in terms of that agenda, or if you want to see the agenda manifest, you know, you become a member. You join. You can join for as little as $5 a month. You can join for $30 a year. And with that money, we invoke the projects that our membership agree to. And so we have lots and lots of followers and supporters and a bunch of members, but members are a subset of that group. But, you know, so far, I say this every week, Citizens United has not benefited us. There is no coffee party sugar daddy. We are totally grassroots, crowdfunded. And so your membership or donation, if you don't like the entanglement of membership, forwards the action. Now, in all honesty, we're looking into other funding alternatives for ourselves. But today, it's membership. And if you want to vote on the questions that the board sends to membership, sign up. Go to www.coffeepartyusa.com, find the join button, push it, and we're good to go.
Thank you, Jenny. Now, let me let you know, right now you're listening to three Coffee Party radio hosts. You have Dan Aronson and Janine Loudon, okay? We do this. We prepare our shows. We do our shows. We don't get paid. So, I mean, whenever you do these donations, remember we use these things for infrastructure and to get the job done. We all do this out of the passion for moving this country forward. So, I mean, don't think that as some organizations or, you know, there was a, I don't know if you saw this article, Janine and Dan, on the Huffington Post, where there is this lady, I think she's in Pennsylvania, that is running for Congress as a Democrat, I believe, and it turned out that she had a women's organization or some type of organization like that that collects, I don't know, between $700,000 and $2 million a year. And guess what most of that money was used for? Most of that money was used to pay her salary and the salary of a senior vice president of a 3-4 person or whatever that is that runs the organization. Well, I shouldn't say 2 or 3 person organization because I don't know the exact amount, but it's a very small organization. But that is what's used to pay a whole lot of them. And you know, so it's not the kind of structure that we here at Coffee Party have. We're all volunteers here working to get this stuff moved forward. All monies collected are used on infrastructure, meaning get our websites, our radio shows, getting all these things out. So please, folks, we really need you. Dan, you have anything to add to that?
Maybe Dan.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Dan. My bad.
Yeah, Dan. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, I was just going to say, and also besides just members, we need volunteers. So we need, you know, it's great to have the money, and it's great to have the numbers behind you that you can go to other organizations and say, we have X number of members. But what we really, really need are active members. We have so much that we want to get done, and there's only so many of us. So any kind of volunteer, any kind of, I mean, even if you have 4 or 5 hours a week, that's all it takes, and you can be an effective volunteer. So don't forget that as well.
And there's another thing. I mean, we have a lot of listeners to the show. I want to really expand the reach of the show. So there's something that the listeners that I want to ask all our listeners to the five shows to do, and that is promote our shows on your Facebook pages, because that's the only way that we are actually going to move these things forward. In other words, you don't have to listen to the show. All your friends don't have to listen to the shows live. But if they know you're on the show, John, you're on the show, you play an important role on this show all the time because you're so knowledgeable in all that has occurred and all that has occurred in the week. That's what, I mean, when you come on to the show, I know that I'm going to get information that I'm going to blog about on Sunday. That's a foregone conclusion. Same with Greg and other listeners out there. Share the shows on your wall, please, so that it can continue to be shared, because that is how geometric progression occurs, and we can start to match what happens on the traditional media, because they're not going to be putting out this type of information. What John had to say about TPP or Dan had to say about TPP, Janine had to say about TPP, You don't even hear. There are some days you go on and you don't hear anything about TPP, and this is going to have a material effect, TPP being the Trans-Pacific Partnership, folks. that is going to have a tremendous effect, a long-lasting effect on your lives, on the lives of your children, your grandchildren. But you never, ever hear about it. And I think Jack Golden may be back and want to add something. Jack, come on, and you want to add something to the discussion.
Now, what are we discussing? You still discussing the same stuff?
I saw you put your hands up. I thought you had something to say.
Okay, but I want to say, I don't know if it's relevant to what we're discussing, but I wanted to say that...
think about it.
I'm
going to
continue about the third party. I think we do need different voices. And I think I'm getting optimistic now that things are going to be solved. We're going to have peace between Israel and the in Palestine, and I'm going to call the country Palestine because that's what it was.
Right.
It's not the Palestinian Authority or whatever you call it. It is Palestine.
Okay, Jack, are you listening to us?
Number two. We're going to have some sort of accommodation with Iran.
Right.
They're going to do away with their nukes, and. We're not only going to have a budget, but I think that maybe we're going to kick the Tea Party guy. I think it's the people that vote for them. It's not so much
I know what you mean, Jack. Jack, I got a question
vote
for you.
The Gohmerts Ted Cruz's, and Ted Cruz has got to be a reasonable guy. We got to talk to Stockton. There's a guy
right.
in Texas named Stockton.
That's the guy running against Cornyn,
yeah.
Okay, Jack,
yeah.
Let me ask you, were you listening to our discussion on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or you don't know anything about that?
Trans-Pacific Partnership, is that between China and the United States, between Japan, Trans-Pacific?
I know it's between Vietnam is a part
of Japan and South
Vietnam.
Korea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
what's something got to be examined would be those trade agreements, let's say, between, South Korea and the United States. They've got to be examined because there are a lot of the disadvantage of the United States.
Right. Well, right now, I tell you what, they were in Salt Lake City a couple weeks ago, and one of the problems are a lot of the things that they want are disadvantaging the other side because increase in patent length doesn't help them. But look, we're shutting down the show in about 8-10 minutes, so I need you to give a closing statement, Jack, before I take you on mute. So give America a closing statement.
Okay. I'm optimistic now because we had made baby steps at least towards some solutions. Maybe I think that people are fed up with most people are fed up with what's going on in Congress, and I think some Republicans are going to split away from
the party.
Yeah, there's not the Well, her whole party, maybe Boehner, Boehner will lead. I'm getting a little optimistic even about him.
Thank
I
you
don't
very
know
much,
about
Jack.
Mitch McConnell. Yeah,
no problem,
I don't know about
Jack.
Mitch
thank
McConnell.
You. Great, look,
That's
Jack.
Another.
Thank you for calling in, my brother, and I'll talk to you next week, folks. That is Jack's golden closing statement. Hey, Dan Aronson, talk to me.
We need to engage and educate our citizenry, and the only way we can engage our citizenry is to empower our citizenry. We must make it so that each vote counts, and that's the only reason why that's the way we're going to get them to the polls. So we've got to kick money out of politics. and have the regular man's vote actually count.
I love to hear that. Janine Loudon.
Hey, so great show today, Egberto, and thanks so much for talking about this budget and talking about the budget philosophy. I think the more that we could sort of take the, bring economics, business, and finance down to the level where human beings actually interact, we stop being sort of dumbfounded by the swirl up there in the corporate boardroom and all the shenanigans, mischief, and mockery of the language that it takes to sort of subvert a healthy economy, a healthy, sustainable economy, which would support a healthy, sustainable government. So thanks. Keep it up, my friend.
Thank you very much, Janine. Love that. And Jean from San Antonio.
Yeah, another great show, Alberto. And I just want to say anybody who's interested in the ACA, I know the deadline is about, 9 days, so you can get insurance by the 1st. I think it is very important to go ahead and try to sign up. I mean, I know so many people are signing up, and you were talking before about trying to get the $7 million. I don't know if it's going to happen, but, I mean, we want to get as many people signing up as possible and to help improve their lives, improve their health. And I think it's been a good burst of momentum for the last 3 weeks or so. And so I hope people can do that, and they hope they put pressure on the Republican governors, mostly Republican governors, who aren't giving the Medicaid expansion to the people who really need it the most. I think it's 1.8 million people, or maybe it's 1.4 million people, have already signed up for the Medicaid expansion across America. And I think that's one of the greatest things about the ACA, and I love to see that for once, something is actually, the government is doing, is helping people on a very tangible level. Teddy Roosevelt was the first president to want to see health care for the people, and there have been so many presidents who've wanted to do this, including Republican presidents like Nixon, and it hasn't gotten done until now. And it's going to start on January 1st, and yeah, there are tremendous flaws in this. You know, I want single payer, but, you know, it is a start. The preconditions are gone. People can get insurance, and I think it's great. It's great to see the commercials. You know, I usually hate commercials and mute them. And then I see those commercials, and I'm like, yeah, you know, sign up, you know, improve your health. And government can do good for people. And the relationship between the individual person and the idea that government can work, that's something that really has to be instilled in the people. It used to be that people believed in that. And I hope that comes back.
Thank you very much, John, and we have to work on that. As far as the ACA is concerned, I'm looking at my bill from Blue Cross Blue Shield. For the first time in over 10 years, my wife, myself, and my daughter, who is is working on her her medical medical thing school, are on the same plan. She is 22 and can remain on my plan. I have the plan is costing me, it's cheaper than what I was paying before because we had to have three different policies. Now we are all concentrated on one policy. There are going to be a very few people, in fact, who will pay more. But the vast majority of people in this society and those that could never, ever have gotten insurance or afford insurance will now have it. Look, folks, it's not the best. John, Dan, Jack, Janine, Greg, and everybody that's listening out here, we're going to try to make it better. But it's a darn good start. It's a darn good start that we have to go by. But anyhow, folks, as you know, here at Coffee Party, we have 5 radio shows now. On Sundays, 3 p.m. Eastern, we have Progressive Politics Tennessee Style with Bud Fields. Please check that out tomorrow. on Mondays at 10 p.m. Eastern, we have Press One for Democracy with Dan Aronson. That's that voice that you've been hearing here before, you know, the one that comes in all the time. Dan Aronson has a great show. On Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, there is the Middle Ground with Eric Weiler. That show, Eric is working on America, a new documentary, so that show may not be on every week, but it's still there. Don't forget it. On Thursdays, we have at 3 p.m. Eastern, Lunch with Loudon. That's that beautiful voice you hear. The only lady that called in today. Ladies, we want more of you calling into the show. Ladies, please, we need you. In fact, I think it would be a much better world if more women would actively participate, because, you know, we sure did a good job of screwing a whole lot of things up. So come on, women, get on in. And on Saturdays, you're here, 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 Central, with Politics Done Right with Egberto Willis, yours truly. Thank you guys for giving me the time. Thank you guys for listening. Please do remember to share our shows, all five of them, on your on through all your different properties, your Tumblr, your Facebook, your Twitter, everything, because we need people to know that there are places that they can go. There are places that they can, where their voices will be heard, and collectively we can together make a change to our society. Love you all. Thank you for being here. As Janine would say, coffee party on. You guys have a wonderful Saturday. Bye-bye.